This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi there. This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Yes, it is. I'm Anna.
Today, we are joined with the lovely Dave Schilling. This podcast conversation was truly a joy for me, for everyone involved. Dave is a wonderful human being to talk to. We talked about his upbringing in California and the little pocket of a pocket of California that is red, and how he found comedy and sports, and just we have a great conversation about identity.
Yes, we
right,
do.
Dave?
Dave's here right, too. Dave?
Dave, you had a good time, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I was texting with my son, who's 2.5.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just kidding. He doesn't text yet.
You can't use him as an excuse yet. You can't use him as an excuse yet.
Damn it. Okay.
Anyway, I just wanted to let everyone know that you had a good time and we're not forcing you to say that.
Yes. Today's date is July 20th, 2020. And here is a copy of the newspaper.
Yeah. We have him.
I am well fed and I am getting plenty of sleep.
Okay, on that note, stay
right,
tuned.
Back to your room now, Dave.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello!
Hey, Shireen.
Hi. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. I had coffee for the first time in a long time today, so I apologize in advance. But it's Ethnically Ambiguous, and we got another guest episode for you today, which is our usual episodes at this point. I'm excited for this one because it's my first time speaking to this person, and I'm very excited to get to know him with the audience.
Yeah, Dave. Man, I just said who it was.
I thought you were taking a really long pause between this first and last
Dave,
name. I'm just like exhausted
Dave.
From saying it.
Are you going to say something horrible about me? It's like, well, here's the thing about Dave. He's a total asshole.
About Dave. No, ugh, I was going to say.
Don't get me started.
I was going to say Dave and I go back. And then I was like, what am I even saying? Like, we should just bring him in.
Yeah.
No, well, you did a great job of that. Here I am.
Yeah, that was seamless. Yeah. That was seamless.
And Dave's here. I don't know. Dave Schilling is, we should say, your full name.
Yeah, you could if you wanted to. I mean,
there are more than one Dave.
Post-prerogative.
Yes. Comedian, comedy writer, journalist, podcaster as well. Yeah, you've been podcasting forever as well.
Yeah, I try to get out and they pull me back in, like in that movie.
That's true. Yeah.
You've seen that one,
They
right?
were talking about podcasting when they said that for sure.
Al Pacino in The Godfather 3. I'm just tired of having to do these ad reads for feels.
But really, they do get you that way, though. Like, once you're in forever. Podcasting...
I mean, the money is just too good.
Yeah. It's like low-key a scam. I shouldn't say that.
it's for
sure. Edit that out. No.
Keep it in. I want.
It is a scam, and I'll say it working for a podcast company. I was scammed into this job.
I mean, but it really is true. I think once you start and keep going, it's really hard to just be like, okay, I'm out of this field kind of thing. I think it's hard, especially if people expect a certain thing from you, or like Anna and I, we used to talk. I mean, the reason why I said guest episode at the top of this is because we used to talk about news every week, and transitioning into interviews, I think, was hard for us just because I think people expected a certain thing from us at that point after years of talking about news. But similar like to Jon Stewart, we just got burnt out. Sorry.
We're not similar to Jon Stewart.
I just listened to the Jon Stewart Joe Rogan podcast because I just wanted to hear what he had to say. I love Jon Stewart,
you know,
so much.
I'm gonna do you a favor, I'm gonna cut that one out.
No, I support Jon.
I don't support Jon ever since learning about his weird intense fight with Wyatt Cenac. I was like, oh, you bought your own shit. He
apologized for that.
Don't they all, but still don't trust no white man. Sorry, I can't help it. Once they get too successful,
is one of the exceptions
I don't
for me.
Respect them anymore. All white men. Brad Pitt, sorry, you're done, brother.
What did he do?
Nothing. He's an old white man now. Sorry. Oh. He passed a certain age. I was like, don't trust you anymore. You have too much money.
I think there are certain white men that I make exceptions for because there is a certain level of respect that I have for them. Like Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, even though he like pivoted a bit, I still respect him. Brad Pitt, still respect. I don't know. This is not about white men. Why are we doing this? This is about
Dave. They've gotten enough
They've
attention.
Gotten enough. Fuck them all.
You know, they're fine.
Let's talk about Dave.
Yeah, why not?
So, as I mentioned, I'm going to take the role of someone that has no idea who you are, because low-key, I have no idea who you are. So,
Most people don't.
Let's start from the beginning. Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Spokane, Washington, but we moved to Merced, California when I was 2. I am the product of an interracial relationship between a white man from Southern California who was in the Air Force and a black woman from Oklahoma who also was part Jewish. So I was raised Jewish in probably the most rural and conservative part of California. Obviously, Orange County is very conservative. Parts of Northern California are very conservative. But I think by and large, where I'm from is the most conservative part of California. So it was a weird experience growing up being vegetarian, being biracial, being Jewish, and not fitting in anywhere. So that's kind of where I came from.
You're perfect for this podcast.
I know. That's what I said to Anna. I said, why haven't I been on this show yet? I'm perfect for this podcast.
That is a good question, why you haven't been on the show. It's weird that I will sometimes be like talking to someone and then it's like it will hit me in that moment of like, wait, why isn't this like Dave been on my podcast? I just it's like the person you're in love with is right in front of you the whole time and you just didn't know it. And that's our situation.
And that's amore. Beautiful. That's amore, y'all.
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like your family found one of the few pockets of California that are
actively racist.
Yeah. It sounds like you had a lot of intersectionality built into your identity, but what was it like? Just walk us through what it was like growing up as a kid that you said was raised Jewish, vegetarian, black. What was that like?
I didn't really have an identity in the traditional sense of like, you are this is what you are. These are the people that you're supposed to hang out with. This is the life that you're supposed to be leading. This is the direction you're going to be heading in. Because I feel like in America, we do sort of have a caste system that's based primarily around race. It's not class as much as it is around how you look. So you're expected to do certain things if you are Latino, if you are black, if you are Italian, if you're Irish, if you're whatever, you know, there's this cultural entropy that sets in when you are a minority or you're any sort of ethnic background or gender or sexual orientation. So it wasn't very clear what I was supposed to do. And I tried to follow my own path because my parents weren't really directing me in any particular path. My dad was a classic kind of baby boomer white man who didn't really have any perspective on emotions or feelings or, you know, how to communicate with me. And he didn't have any sort of cultural identity to pass on. And then my mother is a wonderful person and very bright and very assertive and kind of kept our family together. But, you know, her focus was sort of just like on the Jewish part of my background and not on anything else. So I didn't really grow up with a lot of other African-American people. I didn't grow up in the Black community. I grew up with a lot of white friends and a lot of Jewish friends. And so I was always, wherever I went, kind of uncomfortable and just kind of adrift in terms of my identity. So it was very, very difficult.
Yeah. I'm curious, can you explain your mom's background a little?
Sure. Yeah. My mother's grandmother was Jewish.
Okay.
And so that kind of just passed down informally for most of her life. And then she decided to kind of commit to that religion before I was born.
And do you know what it was like for her growing up as a Jewish Black woman?
Not very good. there was a point in time where my grandmother, her mother, decided they were going to be Seventh-day Adventists because they thought that was a compromise, because at least the Sabbath was on Saturday as opposed to Sunday.
Right.
Whoa. So that was how they got by in a very narrow-minded cultural environment was, okay, we're going to be Christian, but we're going to be the most palatable version of Christianity we can think of. So my mother didn't really practice or identify as Jewish until much later in her life.
See,
that's a very tragic, but I think common thread in a lot of marginalized communities where you just try to be more palatable for the powers that be or like the ruling class or whatever. You try to make yourself more palatable or like stifle yourself.
Yeah.
But it's an unfortunate side effect of being marginalized, I think, and thinking you have to alter yourself to survive or just like cope.
Yeah.
God, this is depressing.
Well, we picked the most depressing subject in the world. But yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be pressure to assimilate into American society. And American society is a synonym for sort of a homogenized white culture that doesn't really exist. White culture is not a thing. And I'm the kind of nerdy person who pays attention to like the AP style guide and how you're supposed to like grammatical and punctuation and stuff like that. And, you know, that the AP style guide is constantly evolving based on, you know, our cultural understandings of culture and ethnicity and race. And so they, you know, recently capitalized Black as part of the style guide, but they decided not to capitalize white because white really isn't a culture. White is an idea that has been perpetuated by the ruling class as opposed to a thing that really is a culture. So whatever we're supposed to assimilate into is not really, it's not valid. It is, it's made up. It's a method of control.
Yeah, it's completely made up. It's a complete method of control.
What is white culture?
It doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't mean anything.
It means capitalism, ultimately. It means the ability to earn money and to use that money to buy influence, and that influence that you then use to subjugate people.
I hate that our world has like become me thinking of like things in conversation reminding me of funny tweets, but that's my reality now. I saw this tweet that was like, I'm paraphrasing, but the idea behind it was, it's so funny to think that the people who get burned by like the thing that gives us the most life are the people that think they are superior. Like the people that are the most sensitive to just like being outside somehow think they're the most worthy of things. And I also saw this like Bill Nye video where he was just like describing how, according to where you are in the world, you're going to have a different skin tone. I don't know. There are so many there's like a rational way to think of things that feel like it's so obvious to think of them that way. And then there's the irrational version where it's like you're so used to being privileged that you're not willing to see like that it's all bullshit. Does that make sense?
People don't want to admit that they benefit from privilege.
Yeah.
That's really what it is you don't want to think that you got an easier time than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So admitting it then makes you admit that you are in some way faulty for what you have, that you don't deserve what you have. And I think in a lot of cases, people have gotten unfair advantages in the way that this society is set up, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let's go back to Dave. Young Dave.
Please, can't
let's go back to young Dave.
Okay.
Growing up in, you said Merced, right?
Yes. It's near Fresno, California.
It's like, oh, okay. I don't know why I thought it was near Riverside. What town am I thinking of?
Merced, it's whatever. Like next to Modesto and
Oh, you're right. Fresno, okay.
And, well, it's a little further up than Fresno, but.
So, Merced, you're growing up feeling like you inhabit multiple worlds and then by that effect don't belong in any single one, which is something that I think a lot of us can relate to. What were you using as like a coping mechanism? What were your outlets as a kid and how did that lead to maybe like discovering comedy?
I think my outlets were sports, really. Like sports are an identifier for a lot of people. It's a thing that you can take pride in. It's like, my team did this, my team did that. I also took a lot of pride in politics because my mother was very involved in the Democratic Party in oh, nice. Merced County. And so I was very involved too. I would campaign with her, like go door to door and hand out literature and do phone banking and stuff every 4 years or every 2 years, you know, when there was a congressional election too, I would be involved in that. And so those were the places where I found a lot of comfort. And then Judaism, you know, religion gave me a lot of comfort. And I think because Judaism is a religion that kind of favors irreverence and humor, that was what led me into wanting to be funny. And my father, you know, even though he was not Jewish, was always showing me things, comedy things, you know, like Monty Python or Seinfeld or mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live, that kind of stuff. So that's sort of, I guess, what defined me as a kid, was sports and politics and comedy. Yeah. And I also loved science fiction. So I watched a lot of Star Trek. And I think Star Trek kind of it tied together all of the things that I always believed in, which is egalitarianism and charity and kindness and intellectual curiosity and, mm-hmm. and all of those things. That is really why Star Trek is great.
So yeah. That's cool. You were raised in a pretty progressive family for such like a red county area.
Yeah.
That's great. It's cool to hear that your mom was like involved in like the local, I mean, is it local politics or like national politics? She was just like out there.
Both, you know, the Democratic Party of Merced County would, you know, obviously be in charge of the polling places or, you know,
right.
working with polling places and stuff. And they had their own party structure and they would, you know, nominate candidates for various things. My dad was on the planning commission of the city of Merced for a couple of years. He unsuccessfully ran for city council in a special election. My mom knew our congressman, whoever that was. You know, my mother is a social worker too, yeah, so okay. She's involved in local government on that level.
That's cool.
I mean, I think it's very, yeah. I hate the word brave in this context, but I think it's very important for someone with like liberal views to be in a place that like is opposing them but still be really loud, because I think that's how you make change in those places, right? Like it's it's one thing to just be in your bubble, especially like us, like we're in LA, it's pretty blue here, it's hard to remember that places of California don't think the way we do. So I like that your parents were active in that way, because it's a testament to, I don't know, them being good people and caring.
Yeah, my mother has never lived in a big city. My mother has never been to New York. My mother has never been to Chicago. There are a lot of places my mother will never go to because she's a very simple kind of rural person. Simple, not in the sense that she's not a complicated and well-rounded person, right. But simple in terms of her need for life to be simple, for being able to drive 10 minutes to go to the grocery store or being able to know your neighbors, that kind of stuff. And then my dad was in the Air Force for 24 years, so he was very much a believer in the efficacy and the benefits of democracy in America and mm-hmm. all those things that seem kind of hokey now or dangerous now. Mm-hmm. I grew up believing in all that stuff. And I feel kind of like hoodwinked after the fact of like, I was so sure that this was correct and right and good and okay. And the last, I think, 10 years of my life, when you combine, you know, everything with Obama and then these years now with Trump, it's been eye-opening to see like, this is actually not so great. Mm-hmm, and I wish I had been more active in trying to change it and make it better.
I agree. Like, I feel like up until I really started diving into socialism and what that means, like outside of being like, Norway, they're social. Like, it was so like, yeah. It was so such a removed topic or like just a way of life for me because my parents, while they are Democrats, they're registered independents, but like they are Democrats basically, you know, they just like the freedom of not having to be labeled or whatever. They don't like labels, but I like learning about socialism and like what it really means. And it's not like tied to like communism, you know, it's like all these terms that you don't learn really too much about outside of the basic, you know, one sentence definition of it in our like American, you know, US government fucking classes that we have to take in high school. It was wild. I was like, oh, like, I don't identify with Democrats in this country. This is like a centrist organization that refuses to like go too left or so they can still keep certain constituents. Like, it's such bullshit. And it's like, oh, I am a socialist. I believe in these things. Like, I did not realize that growing up because I had such a basic, you know, understanding of what socialism, you know, and what our Democrats stood for. And it's like, yeah, no way. I'm like more progressive than your modern day Democrat.
Yeah. But that's just like the scam of the US education system is that like they give you just sound bites of other ideologies and then they flood you with this idea that like there is a system in place that is working for your benefit and you are a part of it. And the reality is the furthest from that. I think it's natural for you to feel hoodwinked, Dave. Especially because I feel like your dad probably was taught the same thing of there's a system in place and it's working because that's all we were taught, right? But that's the whole part of life is to like grow up and realize like, oh, the education system is skewed because it's giving you its own narrative and you have to figure out the truth on your own, which is so unfortunate because education shouldn't be creating its own narrative at all.
Absolutely. I think they put limits on the discourse. They put limits on what you're allowed to talk about, what you're allowed to hear about. And the way that like you said, the way that these other systems of government are described is that they are outdated mm-hmm. or they only work in certain places or it's not practical here or, well, you know, we've thought about all of these things, but this is the best one.
Right.
My dad went into the Air Force when he was 19, 18 or 19. Didn't go to college until he was in his 40s and got his bachelor's degree in political science. And that changed everything about him. There was sort of like a demarcation point between before he went to college and after. And his viewpoints on everything shifted so far to the left that, you know, he was quoting Noam Chomsky before he died. Not exactly before he died, but like, you know, the years before
his
he passed
away.
His last words were the means of production. So I think when you are given the opportunity to learn on your own, if you have the interest in learning on your own, you can see that there's more to life than what we've been taught. We've been fed our whole lives, but you either have to have the interest in doing that yourself, or you have to have someone encouraging you to do that. And I was lucky that I had parents that encouraged my intellectual curiosity and pushed me to read books on my own and form my own opinions. There was a year, 1996, I was like, I'm going to learn everything I can about Republicans and be a Republican. And I went to a Bob Dole rally in my hometown and listened to Rush Limbaugh. And of course, at some point, I'm like, this is horrible.
I think that was your way of like rebelling, probably, right?
Yes. Be like, I was 10 this. Years old yeah. and I was a rebel because I went to a Bob Dole rally. Rebelling against your parents'
ideas, yeah.
Exactly.
Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. Talk more with Dave Schilling.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. TIKA.com.
And we're back. What Woo! A riveting ad break, whatever that was.
Oh yeah, baby. Great ad read.
I think you brought up an interesting point. I'm wearing a Star Trek shirt right now, and I'm thinking about when someone inhabits different intersectionalities or identities within themselves, I feel like some of these kids kind of gravitate towards sci-fi or towards this like fantastical world because it might be the closest they can be identify with in a way. Like I related so much more to like an alien than I ever did to a white person on screen. So that really fascinates me because especially as you enter into this industry, like whenever you decided to enter into the entertainment industry, I think you realize you have to make your own, you have to represent yourself. I guess there are a few entertainers I can think of that are Black and Jewish, but I think when you're growing up, you probably didn't see, you weren't aware of them, right?
My mother always said Sammy Davis Jr. That was the only person. And I guess Lenny Kravitz. There was Lenny Kravitz too, but I don't even know if he was.
But you're grasping
Jewish
at that point, right?
Yes. And now you're just like, well, I think he's Jewish. Star Trek and science fiction give you the chance to expand your mind. And there's something about the power of allegory for people who are of marginalized backgrounds. There are a lot of trans people who love Doctor Who because Doctor Who is sort of about transformation and identity and these very powerful elemental things that aren't explicit in the narrative or the themes of the show, but they're there. They're there enough that it's like, okay, that I can grasp onto this and I can enjoy this. And I think that's true for all science fiction, all fantasy. You know, people latch on to Star Trek because it's a fantasy about socialism, or it's a fantasy about scientists, or it's about, you know, people working together. It's about exploration and adventure and all this stuff. And also it's about, I guess, weird family units. You know, yeah. Captain Picard or Captain Kirk is like the dad that you always wanted and never got, who always says the right thing and always is erring on the side of morality and right thinking and kindness and those kinds of things that you find appealing when you're a child.
Yeah.
But as far as entertainment and like how do you identify yourself when you decide to ruin your life and move to Los Angeles? I'm just kidding. I love it here. This is the place where you get to decide who you are. Like you can really make of yourself whatever you want to be. You know, you can decide, I'm going to always dress like this. I'm going to be the person that always wears a purple suit and a hat with a feather in it. And everyone's going to think of me as the purple suit feather hat guy. Or I'm going to be the nerdy guy, or I'm going to be the cute girl, or I'm going to be the ditz. Or like, this is all about wearing different costumes, Hollywood and entertainment and acting and show business. is all about artifice and artificiality and wearing certain masks or costumes or wigs or whatever to be someone else. So I think I found that appealing because I could come here and I could say, I'm this person and this is who I identify as, and this is what makes me special and unique. If I had been a lawyer, I would have had to have been like everybody else. If I was going to be a doctor, I'd have to conform and be like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. That's true. Like, your job does kind of become your identity when it is those things. Like, when it's a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, you do kind of have to conform yourself to that role first and then yourself second, kind of thing. But this industry is very much like foot forward yourself. Is that, if that makes sense? Like you're almost, you're the product you're selling is you.
Yeah. You have to basically brand yourself in a way that's off-putting.
Especially with the age of social media. It's all, you're like, you're making your own brand you.
Absolutely. And I think that that can be appealing for someone who has never been able to stand out in the way that they want to. You know, I stand out for all the things that make me different and that make me undesirable to quote unquote white culture, like the predominant monoculture that used to control America. You know, I was different and weird, and people didn't understand why I talked the way that I did or looked the way that I did or had the dietary practices that I did. But in the entertainment industry, you get to show off and be, you know, yourself in a way that is, at least in theory, maybe not in practice, but in theory, you can come here and you can be rewarded for being noticed.
If you do it right, I think that is the ideal. I think what kind of trips me up sometimes is that, I think Anna can maybe relate to this too. I think we grow up, maybe as, for like me and Anna's case, like children of immigrants, we don't feel like we're American enough. And then on the flip side, we don't feel like we're Middle Eastern enough. We don't feel like we're Muslim enough. And then we come to this industry and where the things that make us different are the things that we can capitalize on and like stand out. And then you're still told, like, you're not these things, you're not enough of these things, even though they should be the things that you can hold proud or whatever, because certain people will think you stand for everything and stand for, like a lot of people, I'm the only Syrian they know. And that's a lot. That's a lot of pressure if you need me to break down what's going on in Syria just because you think I have all these answers. So I think that's what trips me up. It's like we're raised to think we're not enough of any of these identities. And then we're supposed to be so proud of them at the same time. Like, did you ever feel like you weren't enough of one thing or the other? And how did you come to terms with that?
Oh, all the time. And I still feel like I don't have enough of one thing or the other. I don't know how I've come to terms with it. I guess I emphasize various parts of my background when it's necessary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, during the uprising over George Floyd, that's, I feel like, still going on. It's not over. It's still continuing. But through this whole period, you know, I've really tried to reflect on both my Blackness, but also the privileges that I have because of my background as someone who's multicultural and grew up a certain way. So I've been emphasizing that and thinking about that more. You know, obviously, when these things about athletes and entertainers, Black entertainers, talking about Jewish people in a very negative way has started to come up, I thought more about my Jewish heritage and my religion and all that stuff. When I had a child, I thought about, you know, is he going to be raised Jewish? What are we going to do about that? The fact that he's incredibly white looking is also really hard to deal with, because it's like, okay, he's going to have a lot of privilege because he's going to be able to pass, but he's still Black. He's still an ethnic group that is marginalized in this country. And so there's a balance between dealing with the facts of his appearance and the reality of his background. So I guess I have to go back and forth. I can't reconcile it, because it's all true. Every part of it is true. And that's really what intersectionality means, I think, is recognizing the humanity of everyone all at the same time, and everyone's problems are our problems.
Right. And I am curious a little about that. Like, when you had your son, did you have like kind of a game plan in your mind? Like, had you thought about it a lot? Like, how do I speak to my son about basically like what he looks like, where he's from, what his experience in this country might be like?
Oh, I have no idea to that yet. I mean, he's not there yet. He's 2.5, but well, I mean, I'm flying by the seat of my pants.
Gotta start early, man. Every night before bed.
Which, by the way, okay, he is so cute. I follow all his adventures on Instagram. Aww.
Thank you. Thank you.
He's got style.
He does, just like his old man.
But I will say, I want to just backtrack. Before I ask you how you grapple with it, I think you already kind of answered my question in a way, because you did say that the things that made us feel, and I'm paraphrasing again, but like the things that made us feel so different and the things that we were bullied for are the things that make us so unique now. And I wouldn't want to be so neatly labeled in a box. I would rather not fit in that box, right? So I think that's an important thing to remember, is like, I'd rather not be to fit into one label. I'm amorphous.
Yeah, the box is actually the worst thing. It's when you label yourself too much.
Mm-hmm.
You should know about yourself and be proud of yourself and who you are from every side and facet of your background. But yeah, you don't want to be pigeonholed or labeled or stereotyped for that. And I think that's what we're grappling with now, mm-hmm. is accepting the pride and the belief that who we are is beautiful and wonderful and important and unique, but also, you know, we're more than a religious text. We're more than the stereotypes that people use to label us. We're more than a diversity hire. We're people, we're human beings, and our cultures are varied and complicated and fascinating and wonderful and deserve to be taught with the same amount of reverence as any other culture, you know, as a sort of monoculture of America.
Okay, well, let's rewind to high school, Dave. Are we good with that? How did you...
Oh boy, this is my least favorite part.
I just want to segue. I want to segue into a way to figure out, because when I look at you now, it seems like you've combined all the things that you used as a catharsis. You do comedy, you have a podcast about sports, and like, it seems like the things like sports and comedy, you've like really combined them and are able to utilize these passions of yours. Did you know when you were graduating high school, like, that you wanted to stay in California rather, or move to LA?
I didn't know what I wanted to do after high school, because I was a terrible student. I was a horrible student. I was so lazy. I remember I had a black female chemistry teacher, and her son was an athlete. He was accepted to Yale or Cornell or something. And she's like, my son is, he works so hard, and we all have to work hard to make it in this country, and you come to class like you don't want to be here. And thank God you got a C minus in this class, because I wanted to flunk you just on principle. Mm. And I was like, wow, okay. Am I letting down the entire race by not caring about chemistry? So I didn't know. I knew I wanted to do something important. I remember wanting to be a lawyer for a while, but then I realized I actually just really liked Law and Order.
Hmm.
And I didn't want to be a lawyer.
That was like me and Judge Judy. I thought I wanted to be a judge or be a lawyer, but I just liked Judge Judy.
Yeah, it was just an interest in drama as opposed to an actual interest in the law. And then the decision to go into entertainment was really because I saw Clerks, which is such a bummer to say in retrospect, because Kevin Smith is now the guy who tweeted that thing about having sex with his wife, as opposed to a filmmaker. But just seeing a movie that was funny, it was primarily dialogue, and it looked very cheap, was like, oh, I could do that. So that's why I ended up going to film school in San Francisco. But I didn't even think about the fact that the entertainment industry is terribly difficult to break into if you're a person of color, if you're a woman, if you're LGBT, if you're anything that's other than a white man. I just thought that's what I wanted to do. I think the one benefit to my background that is very clear to me now is that because I didn't grow up in a specifically black community, I never saw the drawbacks to being black that are very real. I was kind of sheltered from that. And I just had a childhood that was blissfully ignorant of prejudice and racism. It sucks to say that, but I guess that was the only reason why I didn't give up.
Right.
Is because I thought, why would I give up?
I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. However you grow up still, you know, it informs who you are. And I think you still are capable of, like, the fact that you can acknowledge that privilege of not having to experience any sort of, like, racism towards you is, I mean, I think that's the important part. It's like, you're aware of your upbringing. You're aware of how you turned out because of that. And I think that's what matters versus being like, you know, I got lucky. You know, I mean, a lot of us got lucky, you know. That's the great thing about growing up in California is, like, we didn't witness certain things that other people did. And we had the nice kind of coastal bubble. Like, while you grew up in, like, a red county, you still grew up in a red county in California, you know. It's like, yeah, it's a little better than what some would experience in the South. And I, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area and then I moved to a very white town, to a point where I was like shell shocked and like was like, I guess I can't wear Air Force Ones anymore because people only wear Vans here. And like that and that's like truly a real emotion I had. But like, I never felt like, yes, I had white friends who would say really dumb shit about terrorism to me, like, you know, and I'd always be like, God, these people fucking suck. But like, I never felt like truly like attacked in any way. Like, I never felt like true bullying or true racism towards me. Like, there were vibes, as we all experience, like, as a person of color, when you grow up, like, you hear shit, you see shit, people act a certain way and you're like, shady, like, they don't know what they're doing. But like, no one ever made me feel in danger or like so deeply uncomfortable that I like had to remove myself from a situation. And I think we're all like very lucky for that. Like, growing up in California, like, you do get that sort of like easygoing vibe. Like, even the more red county places, they're not in your face too much about it. You know, I mean, I know do you agree with that? Or like,
yeah, yeah. I think it was easy to pretend like this was a country that was devoid of racism,
yeah,
because of how I grew up. And it was easy to believe in the benefits of American culture because of that. It's been in the last decade or so that it's become more and more clear that this is a systemic problem,
right,
that isn't just about overt racism. It is about covert racism. It's about the way in which this country has been designed to separate and subjugate certain people.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's the problem. It's not someone coming up to me and screaming in my face,
right,
that I shouldn't be eating lunch at this place, which is, that still does happen when we see it on videos,
yeah,
on social media all the time. It's the covert stuff. It's the hidden stuff. It's the prejudice that I've seen from places that I've worked. It's prejudice that I've seen from, you know, maybe relationships that I just didn't know about, or, you know, where I'm seated at a restaurant, or, you know,
yeah,
any number of things, opportunities that I don't have for apartments or buying a house or getting the promotion or getting certain, you know, getting a raise or whatever. Like, those are the things that are the most troublesome, because those are the things that we've just accepted as not racist.
Yeah, yeah. It's the insidiousness that is the truly terrifying part. Like, it's terrifying,
exactly,
to be bullied and shouted at, because I had my fair share of bullying growing up. My mom was covered for a while. I was the only Syrian in school. I was really sheltered. But the insidious looks you get and little actions like that you don't really realize till you're old enough to recognize why you're seated in a certain place or why someone is looking at you in a certain way. Even past partners that I've had, like little things they've said, those are what really keep me up at night.
Yeah, I do think we are like, you're kind of trained to take it because your parents tell you not to make a fuss. Like, they're like, you know,
yeah,
just keep it moving, keep your head down, keep doing your job. One day you'll be an adult, you'll make money, and everything will be your way. And you're like, that's like what you're told to basically hold on to, is like, things will get better eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Just do your work and keep your head down and don't cause a fuss. And that's like what we're taught. And then after a while, you're like, wait a second, I should have been like, hey, fuck you, brother. You know, like anything. Like, I would have, if
well,
there were certain
you're scared
things I would have definitely spoken out about if I wasn't like, nah, I shouldn't be making a fuss. But it's like,
well, for
maybe
me, there's real fear there. I think there's real fear when you're a kid. Like, for me, I was scared of my mom going outside because her head was covered after 9/11. Like, that's a fear I had that I didn't understand how to vocalize. Or even like when someone said a racist thing to me at work, like 2 years ago, I didn't say shit because I needed the job. Like, there are fears that are so real. And yeah. I was so mad at myself in the moment when it happens, because you think that you can say something, but then you're paralyzed with a fear that is put there by capitalism for the most part, and just like survival mode.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so important about this moment right now and this time in history, is people are finally feeling comfortable saying those things that they've always said to themselves, we shouldn't talk about this.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that has allowed this to perpetuate for decades, is the fear that by speaking up or being difficult or being combative, you are going to lose opportunities.
Right.
When what's really the problem is that you're going to lose those opportunities no matter what.
Yeah.
I always went out of my way to not cause a ruckus at work, to try to be nice to everybody, to seem like I was a hard worker and a smart person and kind and respectful. And that didn't matter for a lot of my jobs in the past. It didn't matter because there are subtle benefits to white culture and being white that you don't see when you're just looking at it without the lens of systemic racism. So if somebody gets a promotion and I didn't, if somebody gets more money than I did at a job, even though I was doing more work, that's systemic racism. We've unpacked and peeled off this kind of layer of racial harmony to see like, there's all this stuff that's going on that's not okay, that's not good, that we allowed to fester because we collectively were also terrified of what would happen to us individually.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't thinking about this problem collectively and not thinking about, I need to speak up because I need to uplift everyone else that is in the same situation as me. And I need to be willing to take some flack and sacrifice some things for myself personally to uplift and improve the lives of other people who are people of color.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. Symbiotika.com.
And we're back.
Woo.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, oh boy.
Oh boy.
Should we talk about your current projects before we say goodbye? Getting into the tail end of this.
No, I don't want to talk about anything that I'm working. Of course I do. That's why I'm here.
Okay, well let's talk about that.
To gratify myself.
Fast forward. Yes. Fast forward this time machine.
All right.
So,
yes.
Tell us what you do now currently and what gets you out of bed every day, which I need inspiration for.
What gets me out of bed every day is being a father, first of all. You don't really have the luxury of being too depressed when you have another human life to be responsible for.
A little baby.
I'm not saying everyone should go out and have a kid right now. Don't do that. That's a mistake.
Maybe get a cat or something.
Even the cat, like, they can handle it themselves. A child needs so much more attention than a cat. So I think if I wasn't a parent, I would be a total bum and I'd just be in bed all day. But yeah, I mean, I'm doing this podcast. It's called Full Court Chat with Dave Schilling. It's a sports improv comedy podcast in which I play a version of myself. I used to be a sports writer and covered the NBA. And so in this round of episodes, I am interviewing comedians who are playing NBA players in this sort of weird bubble situation that they have at Walt Disney World because they don't want everybody to get sick because of the coronavirus. So it just seemed like such a strange science fiction-y dystopian concept that I wanted to build an entire kind of audio drama around this creepy idea. So that's what this is going to be. We have a lot of great comics lined up. We have a lot of wonderful writers who helped craft this very strange story. And that's kind of what gets me out of bed, plus other things. I'm writing a pilot about trying to raise a white son as a black man in America, which I think is very funny. That's what I was doing before we started this podcast. So, you know, you just do stuff. I'm too egotistical and too self-centered to never work. Like, I have to be working all the time. But I'm trying very hard to also think about other people, because there is that trap that you fall in when you're in show business, that you're only going to be thinking about yourself and you have to do all of these things for yourself so that you can one day be a huge success and make lots of money.
Yeah.
But boy, is that depressing and not helpful. You know, there's nothing helpful about that. So another thing that I'm doing that I'm very happy about is I've gotten a bunch of other comedy writers and TV writers to read scripts from unrepresented black writers in Hollywood and try to give them notes and help them, you know, blossom as creatives, because there's no system for black people to get into television or movies. It simply doesn't exist. You can spend a bunch of money on screenwriting contests, or you can send unsolicited spec scripts to managers who are never going to read them. But there's no real clear pipeline for people to get into the business. And you look at the numbers, the percentages of African-American writers in television and movies is incredibly small.
Right.
And it hasn't budged in 20 years. So somebody has to try and help people. And I'm not the most successful person in the world by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm better off than a lot of people who look just like me. And the only way that I'm going to feel like anything other than a complete waste of space is to try to help people and to recognize my own privilege and do something with it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what you have to do. It's like these big wigs, if you will, are not going to help. So we really have to create systems of our own to make shit happen, which is unfortunate, but
it sucks. The labor always falls on our shoulders.
Yeah.
The responsibility of changing the world is unfairly placed upon the people that are suffering the most.
Yeah, it really is.
And then I was going to say, and that is why I don't fuck with rich, white, old men anymore.
Yeah, it all comes back to that, back. Really.
I just, no matter how cool they were at the beginning, as soon as they got rich, white, and successful and rich, they didn't remember who we were. Sorry, Jon Stewart. That's all I gotta say about that.
We don't have to talk about Jon Stewart. I do want to defend him, but I won't.
We can't make them our person, Shereen. That's my only thing. It's like,
they're not, he's, you know, not my person.
I didn't say that. I'm saying we shouldn't make people like that, like, who we care so much about, because they don't matter in the end. Like, I had a real reckoning with, like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, where I was like, you ain't shit. You just another white feminist girl boss up in there, like, doing your thing. Like, in the end of it, like, you still came down hard on, like, Colin Kaepernick. Like, there's people like that where, like, I realized, like, very early on, like, we can't be, like, holding these people up anymore. Like, they've had enough.
I agree with you.
I don't want to support these people who've basically had every door open for them because their skin is white. It's like, I'm not fucking with these people anymore.
Well,
we're going to build our own systems and support our own people.
I think that brings up an important point that we should have, a lesson we should have learned at least 5 years ago. And certainly with Obama and other people like that, is you can't lionize another human being to the point that they are considered infallible.
Right.
You know, I certainly was happy that Barack Obama was elected president. And it's a wonderful thing that we were able to live through that. But he's not perfect. He did a lot of things in an office that I didn't agree with. He certainly didn't do anything to roll back the powers of the executive branch that are now being abused mercilessly by the current occupant of the White House.
Yeah, don't say.
So, so don't hero worship. And I'm not saying that you're doing this with Jon Stewart, but hero worship in general is just a terrible thing. And
oh, I agree completely. I think no one is above criticism.
Yes, you have to be able to take criticism as a successful person. You have to have an ability to look at yourself and say, I fucked up. I messed up real bad here and I need to be a better person. Or as people consuming entertainment say, the human beings that made our entertainment are not perfect. J.K. Rowling, just because she made Harry Potter doesn't mean that she should be talking about trans issues on Twitter and people listen to her.
Well, that's why the concept of celebrity and idolizing anything really freaks me out, is because these celebrities, they have legions and millions of people that think that they're good people because they like what they do or they like the product that they put out or something. And that's a really terrifying new phenomenon, like relatively new phenomenon in the in this course of human history, is this idea that people are above criticism because you've made them into this whatever you want them to be in your head. And like, I remember the same with you and Obama. It's like, I felt like I wasn't dream like I didn't understand how people weren't talking about how he was fucking up in Syria, and I, as a Syrian, I just wanted him to intervene so much and like save us. And I was someone that loved Obama. I voted for, he was the first president I ever voted for. I was like, I was so excited to vote for him.
You would have voted for him twice.
I would have voted for him a third time. But you get disillusioned with these people. I think that's a part of actually recognizing that no one is above criticism, like similar to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, like with her supporting the pipeline or all these things that like there are little nicks in their armor that you have to be aware of. And that's why I'm so critical of people that like supported Warren or like all these things that are like progressive in quotes. But then you dig deeper and you realize like she was very pro-Israel the entire time. She's not like... what Anna said about being like a white feminist, is a really real thing. Mm-hmm. And
Pantsuit Nation, baby.
I guess it's kind of like crossing wires as far as celebrity and like where I'm trying to cross into this territory.
I loved Bernie. I still love Bernie.
I love Bernie too.
It's a cult of personality. Everything is a cult of personality in this country because that's the only language we understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it can't just be that the smartest person with the best ideas with the best resume is going to be an elected official. It's got to be someone who has a brand, who has a social media following, who has a coherent image for the media to digest. I think celebrity as it stands now is incredibly dangerous. I'm not saying celebrities shouldn't exist, because there's always going to be people that we venerate if we have the arts or if we have culture. But celebrity as it exists now is incredibly dangerous for
society.
It's so
terrifying.
Yeah, it's as if we need people on the ground floor who see it for what it is versus people who have like left the planet, if you will, because their world and their experiences no longer mimic, or like they don't know what's going on. Like
Kanye West is a perfect example of someone who doesn't know what's going on in the world. Oh, and yet there is a whole structure of entertainment and media that props him up and says, when you say something crazy like you're running for president, we're going to take it seriously.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're going to write many words about it.
I think
J.K. Rowling has something to say about trans stuff. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
I think that situation is just heartbreaking.
That makes me crazy.
Well, it's heartbreaking from because we're, like, again, left, like a lot of left people. Like left-leaning or liberal people, whatever word you want to use, they're very in your face about like mental health and taking care of each other. And then when you see a celebrity so clearly in a mental health crisis, like has been vocal about their mental health before, he becomes a punchline. Like there's something that really really upsets me about that as someone who also deals with mental health. And again, it goes to show, like, when you have a certain level of celebrity, you have the power to take these ideas very seriously and no one questions you. And so then you see all these people that kind of benefit from someone's mania or someone's distress. And that's the hard, that's when it becomes this really disgusting version of celebrity, that we see it for what it is. It hurts everyone involved. Like, it's like there's no winning. And I don't know. I think the Kanye thing really breaks my heart, even though the things he's saying are inherently and objectively, like, just like out of this world and not based in reality. And I think it's terrifying that someone, that he becomes a punch. Like, I guess it just breaks my heart. At the end of the day, how celebrity kind of turns on someone is heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, the thing that you're experiencing is called empathy.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
It is. You're welcome. It is in short supply in our world. And hopefully more people take a second to empathize with celebrities, empathize with people who aren't famous, people who are normal, people who are scared and lonely and suffering. And, you know, I empathize with even people that are voting for Trump, because they're going to suffer if he gets elected again. They're suffering now and they just don't want to admit that there's a reason why. And and so, as much as I want to be angry and I want to, you know, burn things to the ground, metaphorically speaking, there is a need for empathy and respect and just some sort of emotional connection between human beings on the planet.
Yeah. I do hope every fuck involved in the Trump administration after this, I mean, hoping we, you know, fingers crossed, it's fucking sad that is to say, that we win this next election. I hope every fucking fuck who worked in that Trump administration has to go live in a goddamn like bomb shelter. Like, literally, like, I want you to go underground and I want to never fucking see your face again, specifically William Barr. I have no empathy for him. Come face to face with William Barr, girl. You better. I will. Yeah. I have zero strength. I've never been in a fight before. But if there was one person that I would literally go in a ring 12 rounds or whatever the fuck with, it's William Barr, because he is such a fucking just robot. Like, no soul, has no empathy. We know you're behind those protests, like the feds fucking pulling out random people in Portland, man. We know you're behind it, William. We know you out here, William. We know you're the shadiest fucking person obstructing justice left and right and then acting like it ain't you. He's the devil.
He's a terrible person.
And I have zero empathy for him when I do one day fuck him up, assuming we we run into each other casually in the street.
God willing.
I see this fool in a Target, William Barr. That's the only place I go.
He comes out of hiding and goes to Target.
If I find the one Target he's at, that's the end of you, William Barr.
Yeah, I think there are certain people where you're allowed not to have empathy for. Because
yes, of course. Yes, if they're actively evil human beings.
Yeah, they're past the point of redemption.
I didn't have a lot of empathy for the guy. Who was the guy that ate people? What was his name? Jeffrey Dahmer. Not a lot of empathy for Mr. Dahmer.
Or, like, just, like, for me, like, I don't know, Bashar al-Assad. Like, he's just a monster in my book. I think that you cross a certain threshold and you become a monster.
Cheney.
You become a monster
fists.
That you can't come back from, because power has corrupted you so demonically. Like, I'm like, for like Mike Pence, convinced monster. He sold his soul. I'm convinced. Yeah. There is nothing behind those eyes but darkness. Like, whatever. We're coming to the end of the show, but
we're just talking about who's gonna catch these fists.
I would love for you to come back on. I feel like we barely scratched the surface. You were a delight to talk to.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so grateful that you decided to join us.
Absolutely. Yes, well, this is my favorite topic. It's myself, but also race and culture. It's the defining issue of our generation, I think. As much as things like climate change are crucial, this is, if we don't figure this out, we're not going to figure that out. So,
I mean, it's all related, though. It is. Our inability to tackle these real things that are happening in our world is because of things that have, you know, it's all related. It's all a domino effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell the fam, tell the, I can't believe I said the word fam.
Tell the fam,
all right,
what
tell
fam?
Tell the fucking EA fam.
I'm just going to keep that in, don't edit it out, let them know who I really am. But where,
what's up, fam? Tell them, Dave.
I want to die.
All right, friends of the pod, here's where
friends
you can
find
me. Friends
of the pod, thank you, Dave, for saving me. But where can our listeners find you, keep up with you? When can we expect full court chat?
Yes. So you can find me on Twitter at Dave_Schilling. Very important, because there is an at Dave Schilling that is just a regular white guy from like Nebraska. And he doesn't want to hear what I have to say. And then Full Court Chat season 2 drops on July 30th.
So you can listen to season 1. It should already be out. Okay.
Based on what you're telling me now, it is already out. So please subscribe. Season 1 is also out. So, you know, catch up. I suggest you listen to season 1 first before you listen to season 2. This is an intricate story. It's sort of like Lost, but a podcast about sports. So tune in, subscribe, leave a review, and, you know, be my friend. Just be my friend. I need friends. I love friends.
I'm
an absolute sweetie. I swear to God.
What a plea.
Yeah, I really am.
Follow Dave for him and his son's fits that they post on Instagram, because they give me life to see how you guys are dressed. It's funny because it's like back to back. I'll see like you and then I'll see him and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, we're stunting on them all.
Yeah.
On all of them. William Barr, catch me in these streets looking fly as hell. My son will whoop your ass.
Yeah. He's a cutie.
William Barr?
All of them, yeah. No. Well, I'm specifically about William Barr. He's a cutie.
Hey, look at
after all this time. And his rage is just a misplaced crush.
I'll fight him, but he's a cutie.
Okay, we're Ethnically Ambiguous. Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter. Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's ShiroHero on Instagram. And ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnia on Twitter. I start to like zone out like, no one. But I am on Twitter doing nothing.
And until next time, listen to Full Court Chat.
Please.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.